Welcome to Strangers from KCRW and Radiotopia. I'm Leah Tao. And today's story is about Kenna, who's had multiple lives, multiple identities. She's worn many hats and many other things for that matter.
You know, you get into your 60s and you've done a few things in your life. I'm kind of a Renaissance woman.
Perhaps you noticed that Kenna doesn't sound much like a woman.
You know, I like to confuse people because I like to appear feminine and sound like Johnny Cash in the morning, you know. I hear the train a-coming, you know. It's coming around the bend.
This was my first time meeting Kenna, and she greeted me at her house the way she dresses for work, in a tight top, highlighting a big set of boobs, and tight jeans, silver hoop earrings, and tasteful but rather heavy makeup. She was a gracious hostess, and she showed me around a bit.
So I'm just going to get some water, my own sparkling water, which I make myself, in my kegerator. So this is like a home brewing outfit. I brew beer and carbonate beer. Yeah, but I don't drink it as much anymore. I like cocktails, though. Cocktails are more considered, what, a more female kind of drink, maybe, than beer. Beer is like being a male drink. I like making pretty drinks with pretty rims.
So yeah, you probably guessed it. Kenna hasn't always been Kenna. She came out as Kenna when she was 58 years old.
I'm Kenna, formerly known as Ken. Kenna's about 4 years old. And obviously I'm dressed very female. I have, what, long shoulder-length hair. This is actually my natural color. White, how would you describe it? White,
platinum. Platinum blonde.
Platinum blonde, thank you. That's exactly what I like to call it, platinum blonde. No, it's not white. It's not gray. It's platinum blonde. So I feel fortunate about that. I'm aware I don't pass, which is what a lot of people kind of strive for. I'm tall. I'm very tall. And I don't change my voice. My hands are large. My shoulders are wide. And my hips are narrow. The muscles that I have.
These male characteristics aren't super easy to get rid of. But, you know, the number one male signifier, by which I mean the penis, is quite easy to do away with these days. And when I first met Kenna, she'd been approved for a sex change operation for about 4 years. But she dragged her feet on going through with it. And I was fascinated by the way she was so unapologetically herself. Not overly concerned with passing, as she says, meaning with hiding her maleness so she could pass for a woman. And more than just the fact that she was transgender. That's what drew me to her story.
There is that sort of, you know, tyranny of passing, which is to disappear. That's how it feels to me. It's like to disappear into the other gender. There's a cultural kind of pressure or discomfort with ambiguity, which says, please disappear. Please go into the other gender so completely that we don't see you, because your in-betweenness makes us so uncomfortable. I have no interest in disappearing. And so if I'm going to hang out here in the middle somewhere, and you all can't understand that, my feeling about that, other than me not giving a shit about that, is I don't mind being kind of like a warrior princess kind of thing, 6 foot tall, you know, Scandinavian with platinum blonde hair. You know, that works for me, actually.
Every transgender experience is different, of course. Like, I have a trans woman friend who transitioned fully 12 years ago when she was just 24, and who hated her male body so deeply that she was on the verge of suicide before she had the operation. Kenna didn't feel that way.
I actually never hated my body, because I was kind of blessed with a nice one. You know, I had a nice, tall, athletic frame. I liked moving my body. I liked sports. But I always knew, I mean, I've known since I was 6, that if I had a preference, I'd want to be female. And so that's what I'm working on now.
When I met Kenna, she'd been on hormone therapy for almost 5 years, taking the female hormone estrogen. And she hadn't ruled out the sexual reassignment surgery, but she was ambivalent and sort of squeamish about it.
I really have a hard time. Like, please don't give me the details about how this is going to happen. There's a fear. If I could snap my fingers and be female, I would snap my fingers. Bam. Make me female. But surgery, so it's like, wow, they're actually going to do things. And so there's a, for me, there are mixed feelings about that because I've also been highly socialized. I think males are highly socialized to like think their cock and their balls are just amazing, right? And are gold and should not be, you know, ever messed with. I've got that training. Like, man, just don't mess with that. On the other hand, is that inner urge of like, yeah, but really, I'd much rather be female.
The number one thing that's complicated the process for Kenna is that as a man, she was straight, and she was raised with highly traditional gender values. She grew up in a poor Catholic working-class family in Albany, New York, as Ken. And by the time Ken was in his 30s, he was living on a horse ranch in Wyoming, married to the rancher's daughter, working construction, and playing fast-pitch softball with the other dudes. Doesn't get much more male than that. But since the age of 6, when he'd go into his sister's closet, Ken had a secret urge to cross-dress that he couldn't resist.
When my wife would leave the house or would go on a trip, then I would go and find, you know, some clothes to put on.
Of hers, you mean?
Of hers, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Which was always a little strange, you know. You might be thinking, like, size differences and stuff, right? But it didn't matter. Actually, for, like, cross-dressing, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, it matters now to me how I look and that I wear clothes that are comfortable for my size. But at that point, it just mattered that it was female. That's all that mattered. And then that gave me this great sense of relief. I didn't understand it, and I was quite ashamed of it. My biggest fear in life, by far, was that somebody would discover me.
Your ranch owner father-in-law?
Yes, exactly. I would have died on the fucking spot. I mean, I would have just died.
Did you know there were other people like you?
I kind of knew a little bit, but I assumed that maybe they were queer, you know? Whereas what I grew up with, that they were fags. I mean, this is before the internet, way before the internet, right? Because now it's like, oh, you go online and here's this online community. Yeah, that wasn't happening. So who was I going to be talking to in cowboy country Wyoming about the fact that I like to wear women's clothing? Nobody that I knew. The guys I played softball with. Hey, you know, I really like... Yeah, no.
At 36, Ken sought out a therapist. By then, his marriage was on the rocks.
It took me the whole visit. 45 minutes it took me until finally I could get out the words... I like to dress in women's clothing. That was the first time I ever told anybody in 30 years. Then she said, you know, there are places you could go where you could do this. And I said, in my skeptical New York way, like, where would that be? And she said, San Francisco. And I laughed out loud at her because I couldn't imagine. San Francisco sounded like the other side of the moon to me. She could have said Mars. It would have been as practical to me as her saying San Francisco. I could go to San Francisco. I'm married. I live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I work construction. I'm going to like just pick up and go to San Francisco to wear women's clothing? This is absurd. So instead of going to San Francisco, I wound up getting involved with a blonde with a great ass, and I went to Florida.
The opposite direction.
Well, the opposite direction, chasing yet another woman. No femininity in here, you know, in me. But I continued to cross-dress all the time. Always in secret. But I have to tell you, she had a world-class ass. That woman had a great ass.
Were you an ass man as a man?
This sounds like a Seinfeld episode suddenly, you know. I'm an everything man, actually, I think, or an everything woman.
When the great ass dumped him, Ken went headfirst into a midlife crisis. He was 40 and confused, and he began to look into different spiritual paths and self-help groups. and he wound up in Asheville, North Carolina, with yet another girlfriend, where he did Native American vision quests and joined a men's group.
This was a movement where men got together to talk about their feelings, talk about their lives. So I'm in this group where we're talking truthful, authentic feelings every week, and like, what's going on with your life? Well, here's this big part of my life, and I'm not talking about it. I'm basically sitting there lying, the male bullshit thing. Oh, you know, work sucked and, you know, and whatever. And I realized that I have to come out to my men's group. I have to tell them I'm a cross-dresser, because that's how I identified myself then. I was a cross-dresser. Or what I really needed to do is I needed to show them I was a cross-dresser. So we met on a weekly basis, and I decided the next time we met, I was going to dress in women's clothing and go to the meeting. And I had on makeup, I had on jewelry. I sat in the room, and one by one, the other guys showed up. And each time, the guy would open the door, and I'd go, oh my God, wow, wow, okay, that's a different look. Huh, that's really amazing that you look that way and that you're willing to do this. I went in feeling like, oh man, this is going to be so hard. And this is really touching me. They were so amazingly supportive. I felt like I was celebrated by the end of the night. It was just a remarkable experience. Yeah.
Eventually Ken, who was still years away from becoming Kenna, moved to California, first to Santa Barbara and then to LA, and started dressing female all the time at home, which, you know, complicated his dating life. For the first time since he was 21, he spent a long stretch being single, living this split life, being one way at home and another out in the world. Then one year for Easter, he went to visit people in San Francisco and had a fateful encounter.
I wake up with a Jewish pediatrician on Easter Sunday morning, having had, you know, like my first sex in 7 years. And I think to myself, huh, you know, that was fun. Maybe I do like being a male.
Having sex again felt so good that Ken thought, maybe I could put the trans thing behind me and just be a man. He finally moved to San Francisco, as his first therapist had suggested years before in Wyoming. But ironically, it wasn't to pursue life as a woman, but rather life with a woman. He moved up there to pursue a relationship with the Jewish pediatrician, but that didn't work out. But then he fell head over heels for another woman, and he got married a second time.
I did my best to be a good man.
And you weren't doing any cross-dressing when you were with her?
No, I actually did not do any cross-dressing when I was with her. I had had a ton of clothes. I'd gotten rid of most things, but I didn't get rid of everything. And I was always aware that I hadn't got rid of everything. I was like, yeah, I actually can't get rid of those wigs. And I really don't want to throw away everything.
The female side of Ken, like the female wardrobe, had been thrown deep back in the closet. But it didn't really work.
I would suppose my ambivalence about being male would complicate sexual relations, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm not really comfortable with this role where I gotta fucking perform all the time. I have got to be on you all the time because you're so beautiful. I feel more motivated sexually, like if we have romance, you know, not just jump on it. Look, I'm hot. You know, like, yeah, I understand most guys think like that, but I don't think like that. She one time shouted at me that she was sexually frustrated. That's how she said it. Clenched teeth. I'm sexually frustrated. But when she said that to me, you know, I want to say, I was like, don't you want to like give me flowers or something? I mean, don't you want to like take me out to dinner? Can we like talk? Can we talk? Because maybe that would work. You know, do something nice to me.
So you could say that Kenna fulfilled the female stereotype in that relationship. She was the woman, if you will. But in her mind, that's what she'd always been, secretly.
in those sexual interactions with people throughout, while on the outside I am looking like a male who's performing, on the inside I'm imagining something completely different. Because for me, the biggest sexual fantasy was me as a woman being with a woman. Basically, that was happening in my head most of the time, as I'm a lesbian, and they don't know it. They don't know they're a lesbian. I know we're lesbian.
The second marriage ended, and Ken remained Ken for about a year. And then the female side came back, sort of with a vengeance. She returned to dressing female at home and male outside.
And then it started to get painful. I knew I wanted to live as female. Now changing into a male world, which previously had been fine, living two lives, now was becoming untenable. I hated changing.
Kenna had gone back to school and had become a librarian, working at UC Berkeley. She asked to be transferred to a department where she wouldn't have to interact with the students so much, so she could make her transition to full-time womanhood under less scrutiny. She started on the hormones, got her new job working at Bancroft Library at Berkeley, until one day she strapped on the boobs and went to work in full female regalia. This was Berkeley, which may be the best place in the country to make a transition like that, and her colleagues were good about it. But not surprisingly, dating got real complicated again.
Yeah, like not just who am I attracted, but who's attracted to me as a trans woman? I mean, there's a woman I know who is a straight woman who's I find very attractive, and we have great rapport. She's a straight, attractive woman who's still within what I've been attracted to my whole life. That works for me, but I don't work for her. But then how does a lesbian perceive me? You know, many lesbians wouldn't consider me female.
Because?
Wasn't born with a vagina.
And you still don't have one.
And I still don't have a vagina, right?
I wonder if that's why people sometimes have the surgery to kind of resolve that. At least lesbians would sort of be like, oh, you fit in our bucket a little bit more, no?
Actually, my therapist has suggested that. It's like, you know, actually, that's probably would be more likely that a person would be more attracted to me knowing I had a vagina. But see, that's that's for them, right? That's for their view of me. That's not my view of me, at least yet. I mean, I'm lurching towards that, it seems to me. I'm heading there, getting the vagina, but that's not of my primary interest. My primary interest is of how I appear and how I feel. And not naked, necessarily, right? It's how I look in the mirror. When I look in the mirror, I want to see a feminine appearance back at me. So genitals is like this secret little compartment right down there. We don't walk around with our genitals displayed.
But why then ever change that?
Because the hormones have had their effect, and one of their effects is it makes that whole package down there not workable from a male aspect. And also, I actually don't like my male genitals. I don't like them. And the operation, male to female, is really kind of remarkable. They can do a remarkably good job. I mean, you can actually get a vagina. You can get actually a working vagina, a sexually sensitive, responsive working vagina. That's pretty good.
So a couple of weeks ago, Kenna had an appointment with the best sex change surgeon in the country, Dr. Meltzer in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I went with her. It was just a consultation, but it was a first step, and Kenna was nervous about it, so I wanted to see how that was going to go. I was also curious to see how Kenna would be received outside the very liberal California coast where she and I both live. We talked about this a little at the reception desk in the hotel while we were waiting to check in.
It's kind of amazing walking through the world transgendered. It's like a walking social experiment. Every interaction I have is informed by me being trans. I mean, there might be people trying hard not to make much of a scene about it and not notice it, but that becomes obvious. You know, like people might have a wide-eyed look and they're talking very normally, but you can see that as you're talking to them, they're thinking, oh my God, I'm talking to a transgender person. So, oh my God, oh my God. You can see it. I mean, that's fine. Yeah.
The receptionist interrupted to check us in, and Kenna pulled out her ID, which illustrated the chasm of her life.
It says, Ms. Kenneth Fisher. I think it's so funny.
That kind of says it all, doesn't it?
It does.
She hasn't formally changed her name from Kenneth to Kenna because it costs $500, which she hasn't had. She did change the gender on her driver's license from male to female, because that's pretty easy to do in California, and you can do it without officially changing your name. Hence her documents say, Ms. Kenneth Fisher. But the receptionist didn't flinch at any of this. We asked her where we should have dinner, and she recommended a place, and when we asked what kind of food they had, she said, they have everything. They have wings, mac and cheese, burgers, I mean, everything, which was sort of funny to me. It was a reminder that we were in a different cultural territory from the kale and quinoa country where Kenna and I live. But even so, no one batted an eye at Kenna in her makeup and big boobs. Everyone was extremely nice in restaurants, cabs, hotels, everywhere we went. Maybe even extra nice so as to demonstrate that they weren't prejudiced. And Kenna might be right that in that sense, everyone does react, even if it's with extra niceness. But how nice is that? We had a couple of margaritas with dinner, and we skipped doing any recording that night. Kenna was nervous about her appointment with the doctor the next day, so she kind of wanted to put it off. And we agreed to meet at 8 in the morning instead. But the morning came, and Kenna kept me waiting. She texted me at 4:15 to say she needed a little more time to get ready. And it was a full 45 minutes before she came down. I wanted to look good, she told me. And I thought, she's a woman, all right. But she'd forgotten to apply an important piece of her makeup, so off she went again to the ladies' room in the lobby. And after 10 minutes, I decided to see what was going on in there. Hello.
Oh, recording in the bathroom.
Yeah.
The most unusual interview ever.
What are you doing? Are you getting ready?
I'm going to apply my lipstick. You know, it's so critical, right? We're all so critical of our looks. I am.
I love that collar.
I know, isn't it great?
I know, it would be good
for
me too.
It's a stain, and it stays on 24, it's like, it is 24 hours.
Oh, you can totally do that.
That's when the receptionist came in to use the bathroom, and it was time to turn off the mic. We went outside to wait for our cab.
We're heading up to the point where I'm going to approach the desk. From here to that point, it starts to get intense. Because the appointment's at 10. It's now 9:15. So 45 minutes from now, I'm walking in and going, hi. Starting this process. You know, I'm still ambivalent about it.
But she wanted to tell me why we were here, despite her ambivalence about the surgery.
What is it like to think about something for 57 years? You know, this started when I was 6. And like, I don't feel done. My goal in life is to become a hot, sexy woman. I do stuff about that all the time. Fashion, clothes, makeup, and how can I look as hot as possible? It's all about showing off the body, showing off all the my best features, knowing how to do that, appropriate for my age. Like, I'm not trying to be 20. I'm trying to be this, an age-appropriate, hot, sexy woman, as much as I can.
And on that note, we were off to see the sex change doctor.
Where are we now?
Yeah, in the office. We're in the office and I'm nervous. It's just big. There'd be some things I wouldn't mind being here at all for, like breast implants. Like, I'd be excited about that. But
the issue is the money?
Yeah, yeah.
You could do a crowdfunding.
Right.
Kickstarter. Kickstart my boobs.
Right, kickstart my boobs. Kickstart my sex life. That'd be nice. Yeah.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good.
Hi, I'm Linda.
Hey,
and you're
Linda.
Missy Kenna.
I am.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, likewise.
Linda is Dr. Meltzer's practice administrator, and she came to talk to Kenna about the procedure and answer her questions.
Do you know a lot, or shall I start from the beginning?
Yeah.
No, in some ways, because I'm also rather squeamish. You know, like I don't sometimes want to know too many details.
Well, then we'll kind of keep to the basics.
Okay.
That didn't prevent Linda from giving us quite a few details about how they create the vagina and the labia and the clitoris. It was pretty awe-inspiring. And Linda was great in this sweet suburban soccer mom way.
What kind of questions or concerns do you have?
Two, primarily, would be around urination and sexual function.
Okay.
Yeah, those are the two biggies.
Well, generally, if you are orgasmic preoperatively, there's no reason that you would not be orgasmic postoperatively. He doesn't cut any nerves. He actually takes the neurovascular bundle that's there and wraps it up right into the Mons area.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything is there. It's just in a different location. And sometimes it takes folks a little while just to learn, but he doesn't actually cut a nerve.
Yeah, that's what I've done.
And as far as urination goes, now sometimes due to swelling, you can kind of shoot up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And you have to learn how to tilt your pelvis for a while, and he can correct that when you come back for a labiaplasty.
Oh, I see.
At this point, Linda got out 5 glass dildos in different sizes that Kenna would use to dilate her vagina after it was created to keep the shaft open and expanding.
So this is your number one dilator. It actually has marks on it, these little blue dots here, that tell you how deep you're going. It's got little finger holes on there, so you make sure that you're putting it in the right direction, and it also keeps it from being so slippery. The Surgi lube gets real slippery.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'll pop this one in, take it out, and then you'll put the number two dilator in. Okay.
It's kind of funny to see her swing around these dildos so nonchalantly. But in this office, sex talk and sex change is almost their entire business. Dr. Meltzer's done more than 3,000 gender reassignment surgeries. And he came to talk to Kenna.
And then one thing I'm looking for, which I don't see on the... How old are you? Oh, 62. Okay, perfect. I was just consulted on an 84-year-old who's actually in very good health, so I'll do her surgery as well.
Wow. Imagine that. It brought home for me just how strong the pull is to go all the way if you're transgender, even at 84. Then Kenna had a physical, and they gave her a surgery date for next February.
That was an experience.
So tell me, how are you feeling now post-consultation?
I mean, I'll think about it quite a lot, obviously.
Kenna had agreed to a surgery date, but she was still on the fence. I wondered about the factors, and I remembered that the night before, I jumped in the pool after dinner because it's like 100 degrees even at night in Arizona. But Kenna didn't want to join me. She said she wasn't ready to wear a bikini in public. So I asked her if this was the very kind of thing that would make her go through with the surgery.
I mean, I wear a bikini at home in my backyard all the time, and I think my body's just fine, actually. I do. But public would be different, yeah. You know, if I had breast implants and, sex change operation, I probably wouldn't be overly shy about it.
So maybe we'll meet here again next year for a bathing suit vacation. Breasts aren't covered by insurance the way the bottom surgery is, and Kenna is majorly bummed about that. She wants boobs big time. And my favorite thing about her was her attitude to this whole process and the strong sense she had about which female attributes she most wanted, which she wasn't so sure about, and also which male attributes she didn't mind holding on to. Like, I asked her why she doesn't change her voice. Most transgender women teach themselves to speak at a higher register, you know, to sound more female, but not Kenna. And I wondered, why not?
Because chicks dig my voice. And I like that. You know, I mean, I like women and I like that they like my voice.
The continuing conundrum for Kenna from a dating perspective, of course, is that the women who dig her beautiful, booming male voice may not be the women who are most likely to be attracted to someone dressed as a woman, let alone someone with a vagina. But even if she gets the surgery, she'll still defy many of the definitions we put on things. You might think that then she'd appeal to gay women who like butch ladies, but here's the thing. Kenna is not a butch woman, despite certain male attributes. She likes lipstick and nail polish and jewelry. She's a broad-shouldered, big-handed, deep-voiced, girly girl. And that is what I loved about her story. She's a stranger, if you will, to all these categories we create. A stranger in every single group. But since she came out as Kenna, for the first time in her life, perhaps, she's not a stranger to herself. And what a journey she's been on. The courage she's shown, the sacrifices she's made, trying to live as male, then as part-time female, then as male again, and now finally as Kenna. I felt honored to spend so much time with her, and grateful that she was so remarkably open about her story. Kenna says she's currently 80% in favor of having the surgery in February, and if she does, and if she's willing, of course, I promise we'll do a follow-up story. And look, I don't mean to suggest that transgender people aren't discriminated against in this country, because sadly that happens all the time. But it was nice to see Kenna treated with respect and kindness everywhere we went, which is probably because transgender has hit the mainstream recently with stars like Carmen Carrera and Laverne Cox. As Kenna says, she suddenly feels trendy. You can see pictures of Kenna as her new trendy self and in her former incarnations at kcrw.com/strangers and on our Facebook page at facebook.com/strangersnomore.org. Facebook is the best way to engage with the show. We have really fun discussions, and we're inching towards 3,000 likes. If you go like it now, maybe we'll get there by the next episode. You sometimes ask how you can help the show. Well, that's one way. Another is to give us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It's just one click. You don't have to write a whole review, just 5 stars. Because we're close to 700 ratings there, and it would be so great to reach that number too. So please. And hey, you know you can sponsor this podcast, right? And all the Radiotopia shows. If you want to know more, email sponsor@prx.org. You can also follow me on Twitter, @LeahTao. And you can sign up for our mailing list on my site, storycentral.org. If that's too many websites, you can call us with your comments and story ideas at 844-NO-STRANGER. That's 844-667-8726. If you have any stories about trips, you know, travel or something really trippy that happened, or about fame, famous people you've met, striving for fame, getting famous, we want them. You can also email us at strangersradio@gmail.com. I want to give big thanks to Katie Martini for introducing me to Kenna. She has a storytelling show in San Francisco called Busting Out Storytelling. They're at bustingoutstorytelling.com. We are a founding member of Radiotopia, all your favorite podcasts in one happy family. And it may be the only truly happy family that's not boring. And here's a sneak preview of the next show from our sexy and talented brothers at Love and Radio.
You go into a gym where there's a trainer or a manager you know pretty well. You say, I've got my fighter here and I'm looking to get him some work. You say, he could use a few good rounds. The guy on the other side will traditionally say something like, I have this other guy. He's a good fighter, which means he can make it look good. And you've just fixed the fight.
You don't want to miss that when it comes out later this month. As always, big, big thanks to Mike Dodge Weisskopf for helping me with the music, sending me some great tracks, to my production helpers, Louisa Beck and James Kim, and to Ray Guana for mixing. Also, big, big thanks to Julia Barton, Kristen Cartier, and Alex Chadwick for their help. I want to thank Dr. Meltzer and Linda for letting me record Kenna's consultation. They were so nice, and it actually helped sway Kenna in favor of the surgery. Radiotopia is supported by the Knight Foundation and by MailChimp, who celebrate creativity, chaos, and teamwork, which is pretty much what goes on in our production office, also known as my home, every single day. Strangers is supported by the Leon Lowenstein Foundation, the Lucius and Eva Eastman Fund, and by KCRW's Independent Producer Project, who have a 24-hour radio race, August 2nd to 3rd, where you can win amazing prizes by producing a radio piece in 24 hours. It's fun. Do it. The Independent Producer Project is supported by the Annenberg Foundation, the Goldhirsch Foundation, and the Roth Family Foundation. I'm Leah Tao. Until next time, happy summer! And don't be a stranger.
Radiotopia.